Right now, I have podcasts that are just like stacked up, but
Yes.
I'm gonna air this one because we talked about Halloween as just a double episode on Halloween.
Nice.
Later in the day, evening. So
that's
welcome
all,
to the Halloween
you.
Episode, everyone.
Yeah.
Wow. No. Welcome back to another episode of Beyond the Check Service Industry Podcast. I am Rashawn Parker, and we're going to talk about all things service industry related or whatever else we feel like talking about. If you haven't already, please go watch my television show, Beyond the Check Worker, in addition, now streaming on Amazon Prime and Tubi TV. If I could say that any faster, I would. My guest today is going to be a fantastic gentleman who loves to talk about food and cooking, and also, he's a librarian.
Yes.
He's also the host of the podcast, The Well-Seasoned Librarian. And as far as I know, he is in fact not illiterate. Welcome, Dean Jones. Hi, Dean.
Hey, Rashawn. Thanks for having me on the podcast. I really have enjoyed getting a chance to listen to your podcast, and I liked all your guests. You've had some wonderful guests, so thank you for having me among them.
Oh, thanks for listening. I didn't know that people actually did that.
Now, that's not true. You have a lot of people.
It's growing. We're growing. We're growing together, Dean. We're growing together.
Yes, very much.
Very much.
I'm all about Halloween. I'm a big horror fan. And I have my own study. Like, it's the one part of the house that I'm allowed to decorate because I would fuck the house up if I decorated it. And it's got all this like scary gothic stuff. I have like hundreds of books on vampires, Frankenstein, werewolf, horror movies.
All the classics.
Yeah, horror writers. I'm a big H.P. Lovecraft collector, so I have a whole shelf of his stuff. Ray Bradbury, everybody. I'm a huge horror fan, nerd. I have books on all these weird subjects, bizarre subjects. Just, I love talking like about weird stuff. So like, I like to read about all kinds of things, like death, burial, just all kinds of stuff. And so my wife's like, you can keep all your stuff, your weird shit in here. And the rest of the house is going to be normal. And that works out for me.
That's fair. It's your man cave. It's your man cave. So why don't you tell me about your podcast real quick?
Well, I have been doing a lot of different shows where I've talked to authors for my library, which is an academic library. So I'm talking to a lot of people that are writing about psychology and self-help, stuff like that. And I like that well enough, but I always, you know, thought, well, I'd like to do other things. And I worked and collaborated with the Alameda County Library System independently. I work with a group called BayNet, which I'm the president of, and it's a consortium of librarians working together. And I did a panel where I interviewed chefs and food writers, and I'm like, I had the most fun of my life. I getting to talk to a chef about his job, getting to talk to food writers about what they do. It was so much fun. I'm like, I just had the light bulb above my head. I'm like, I should do this. And then my son started his podcast. He has one about disability, and he interviews people that are disabled and about living with disability.
Oh.
And you know how a lot of people my age have their kids show them how to do online stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
I did that, and I had him show me how to do the online stuff, and he helped me start my podcast, and it's just been wonderful ever since.
Ah, cool. Good for you. So you actually listened to him when he like tried to teach you how to use the stuff.
Yeah, I'm one of those older people that if the younger people are telling me stuff, I figure there might be something worth listening to here. I might want to actually pay attention.
Good for you. Good for you. Could you teach my mother that?
After I teach my mother that, I'll help you with that.
Touche, sir. Yeah. So she can email. She can email. She just got an iPhone. I shit you not.
Oh.
Like 2 weeks ago. And luckily, you know, I live very far away from her, so I'm not the one that has to deal with the new stuff. So my sister gets the phone call that's like, what is this? Do you know how long it took me just to be able to call you?
I think we have the same parent.
I mean, to be honest, the first day that I had my iPhone, it did take me like 15 minutes to figure out how to call someone. I was like, what the hell? How do I just make a phone call? Right. So,
I got mine. I got mine kind of late. I didn't get it right away. So I kind of had that learning curve for a while, but I took off with a vengeance, and now I have to kind of hide it from myself at home. So I'm not on it all the time.
Smart. Yeah, I don't know how to do that. Yeah.
It's hard. Right. There's like a 10-step process.
Put your phones down, people. Unless you're listening to this right now. You wait till it's over and then put your phone down.
Well, my wife kind of did give me a moratorium where she's like, when we're watching TV and together, put that damn phone down. So it's usually in its little area and its cubby, you know.
Oh, it's got its home. Phone. You got to get a home for your phone, and sometimes it needs to go there, particularly during dinner.
Yeah.
Put the phone in the phone home for dinner, guys. Oh, Hang out with your family. I know it's hard.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
But you got to try sometimes. Thanksgiving is coming up.
Oh, yeah.
I wrote down superhero librarian troop.
That sounds right. Most librarians are superheroes. Right, good.
So you have what was the name of the group again?
It's Baynet. So it's a consortium of libraries in the Bay Area, and we do all kinds of events and stuff. And we do kind of programs and things for librarians, and also we post job listings so people can find employment and stuff. So it kind of is service-based organization.
Yeah, it's like the X-Men camp for librarians.
Yeah, you know, librarians really are, like, I'm an academic librarian, so I don't work as hard as a public librarian, but I say the toughest mofo in the world is a children's librarian. Though they come in the morning and they have, like, you know, they start their day with maybe a cold coffee they've nursed throughout the day and a Golden Graham, and they're like, you know, they're like a Marine going into the beachhead, you know, taking care of kids programming all day long. By the end of it, you know, it would kill me, but like they're getting through it like the Terminator, and it's just wonderful to watch. So
I mean, you got to love what you do to do that, right?
Oh yeah. And they do love it.
And yeah. And be a fan of being around kids all day long.
I like being like, I love being a librarian. And when I help people, when they like, thank you in their dissertation, or they're like at the graduation ceremony, they thank you. It's like, oh my God, you know, it's like, it makes it all worth it.
All right, so you're working in a physical library.
Mm-hmm.
It's an academic library. So I imagine that, you know, PhD students, master students, these are the people using the actual paper books still?
No, they don't. They resist it as much as possible. Everybody wants to work it. You know, and it's sad because we have some amazing books that would be very useful to many of them. And I don't know how many times this happens. They'll finish their dissertation. They're done. And they come back and visit the school for whatever reason. They're looking in the stacks. They're like, oh my God, look at all these great books. And I'm like, they've always been here. You've always had them.
They were here the whole time, guys. But now they just, just look it up online, download the digital version.
More and more libraries are going to eBooks too. It's kind of a...
It's almost up turning into a museum.
Yeah, I mean, we're like a lot of industries. The writing's on the wall for many of us. So you need to adapt and find better employment or employment where you're not going to be impacted. And academic librarians are getting hit really hard. Libraries, a lot of universities don't need as many academic libraries or need them at all. So it's getting to be kind of a scarce field.
Right, but we still need all those books. Like, we can't, like, the whole system crashes and we lose all the digital shit. We still are going to need those books.
So. I agree with you 100%. And plus Google, you know, when you use Google, imagine if you went to the supermarket and they just had the stuff that you only bought, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at the supermarket. Imagine if it like shifted, it was a smart supermarket and you went and it's like, you bought onions last time. So you're going to show you the onions. We're going to show you, but you wouldn't know about new produce. You wouldn't know about any of the good stuff that's seasonal. You wouldn't know about something unusual that came in or something that's new. You would just have what you've always purchased. And Google and a lot of algorithms on these search engines are like that.
Yep.
It just shows you the stuff, but it doesn't give you new stuff. And paper, you know, books, real books, when you browse the stacks, you're like, oh, I didn't know that existed. I didn't know that author wrote that. I didn't know that topic was available. It's stuff that you wouldn't know was there.
It's all the details. Like we're surface level. We take in information on a very surface level basis across the board, I think. And so anyone doing the deep dive, that's where you need the books. And even I guess if you know, you're going to get the digital one, but still, I started ordering cookbooks recently. For the first time in my life, I've never actually ordered a cookbook, but I ordered the hardbacks because, and then I opened them and it was like so much in there, right? Like there's a whole world and they're all different, right? And sure, I could download it and put it on my iPad, but like, I don't know. I want that hardback when I'm cooking with it, right? And because of the author, right? I like, you want to support that and whatever. And so just having that book next to you to be able to go through the recipe is, I don't know, it just feels better than looking at a screen.
Oh yeah, and I love cookbooks too. I'd love to work in a library that was largely working around cookbooks and food programs. I would love to be like a food librarian. I just had applied for a job in a local city where they were hiring for a food and wine librarian. And I'm like, put me down for it. I want to be that. But I didn't have enough experience, so they didn't hire me.
What about a book about compiling all the your experience with reading so many books? That's a very meta, like, right? That. Like,
yeah.
How I'm not sure how that would work 100%. It just popped into my head.
That's a great idea. No, I think I could do that. I think that would be something that would be kind of fun. Maybe that's in the future for me.
Though I would love to see skits about the illiterate librarian. That would be fucking fantastic.
Do like a Saturday Night Live, like a 2 or 3 minute sketch, a guy trying to hide the fact that he's... I mean, we can't joke about illiteracy and I want to help people, but it would be funny to be the librarian that can't actually read. And like, I need a book on this topic. Oh, how about this blue one?
But as long as learn to read, kids, right? Like,
yeah,
as long as you punch it. Yeah, as long as you punch it with like a public service at the end. Like, it's not funny to not be able to read.
Once in a while, a student will ask me for help. And if it's somebody I like, I'll say, I can't read. And they look at me and I'm like, I'm just kidding. And they're like, oh, okay. Okay, dude.
Oh no, there's a dog passing outside my house.
I've scared your dogs.
They're like, you can read, Dean, you can. tell me about oh my lord goodness, hold on one
that's
second.
Okay.
Everybody,
no, that's okay.
I like to leave the door open so they can come in and hang out, but
man, yeah,
screw them.
Pets are very unpredictable.
Screw them. They're locked out now. He's howling. I don't know if you can hear that.
Oh, no.
He thinks he's a wolf. He's a tiny wolf. Anyway, tell me about how and the food you got into that food panel. Tell me more about the food panel.
Oh, so I have... Oh, that's actually a good question, because I met a lot of people through I'm a writer on Medium, and I write a lot of food writing on Medium. There's a newsletter kind of format digest that I work on called One Table, One World on Medium, and there's a lot of different authors on there, and it's just a really wonderful little forum for us to get to write. I do a lot of recipes on there, and I do book reviews or just my digressions about cooking and working. I've worked in the food industry in the past and a long time ago. And, just talking about, my life in cooking. I almost became a sous chef at a restaurant briefly. But I, after like a week of doing it, I just got flop sweat and panicked. And I'm like, I am not cut out for this. This is too tough.
It's a high stress environment.
Really stress. I'm at ADHD. In fact, I have dyslexia and ADHD. I didn't read till I was like almost in junior high. I read really late. I was in special ed. I have learning disabilities. So like for me to be a librarian is really weird. And
I'm surprised
being a sous chef.
Go ahead. I was just going
to
make a
bad joke. Being a sous chef would be murder. Cause like to be ADHD in a restaurant and having all these chefs looking at you like pissed off, that's like my nightmare. So I was like, I can't do this.
I mean, the amount of organizational skills that like just the guy on the grill has to have in like a super busy night. I can't do that. Like, no. Like
I was in the military. Being in the military, basic training was nothing compared to being in a kitchen. Being in kitchen is harder. I would rather have a gun, like, and be in battle than be in the kitchen, because it's tough, man. It's really, really hard. You know, man, it's hard. Like, it's And I was like, I can't do this. This is really hard.
It's brutal back there. I mean, the front of the house is brutal. I mean, the amount of organizational skills that a server has to have to run, like, you know, on a busy, busy night of even a 5 to 6 table section can get hairy sometimes. And yeah, not for the weak of heart.
Yeah, and I didn't want to be that guy that was there in the floodlights when, like, we're down a person or you're missing somebody or somebody's sick and you're that guy that's got to do all that. I'm like, no thank you.
The weeds, man. It's called the weeds because it's just overwhelmingly overwhelming. And it's, people break down and cry. You just break down and cry. Fuck it. Walk out, storm out. Like, this is too much. I've seen so many people do that.
The training was great, though. I really loved it. Oh, yeah. No, I tried to.
As a server, I tried. Like, I worked at this restaurant that had dining rooms all over the place. It was this huge Victorian building. And all the rooms in the building were different dining rooms. And people had called out. And it was just like me and like 5 other servers running around this whole building. And for some reason, we had tables just like in all the dining rooms. So like there was no way that you could get from one side of the building to the other side to just check on your tables. And you were gone for and people are mad and everyone's mad. It was like, fuck this. And I just threw my book and I'm like, I'm done. And they're like, no, they just stopped me at the door. Like, please, 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 please. Please don't go. Please don't go. And I'm like, this is insane. Like, this is unfunctional. Like, none of this is okay.
Yeah, no, and having ADHD, I just thought, I thought I would be screwing them over by doing this. Because if I did this for a long enough time, it would be to the point where the guy would eventually be like, look, you know, you had a good run, but it's not working out. And I told the guy, like, I'm doing you a favor, seriously. Just, I'm not trying to, you know, be down on myself, but you don't want me. I'm
not
my,
cut out
my
for
mind
this.
Is my mind is not tall enough for this ride, you know.
So on a serious note, how did you learn to deal with the ADHD and cope with it and become a librarian?
Well, you know, I was always telling people when I was young, I had people. My brothers went to university. They went to school. And my family was blue collar, though. They were like, they thought going to university or college was beyond us. So they're like, we were never prepped for that. And, you know, going through high school, we had it tough. And my parents, we were poor. Like, in fact, we were even like farmed out to relatives because we were kind of semi-homeless for a bit, you know, just for a little bit. But like, we had a tough time during high school. My parents are kind of like, we don't have money to send you to college. Your grades aren't good anyway. So...
Everything was stacked against you, Dean.
Yeah, so they're like, you should go into the military. So I did. I signed up while I was in high school, and it was nice knowing that after high school is over, I had that to go to. So that was kind of like some kind of comfort and security. And the military offered that for me. It was nice. I had 4 years of like actual room and board and like a job. Structure. So that was nice. I worked in farm labor before that during my high school years before school. And helped the family out that way and just giving them some extra money. But, you know, college was not in our cards, and we were never told you'd go to college. It was like, you're going to work in a factory.
Or this farm.
You're going to work. Yeah, to work on a farm. So when I got out of the military, my brothers were like going to school and stuff. So I tried that, but I was bad at it. But my son was, you know, born disabled. He was born with visual difficulties. So that are kind of, they're not something where it's just the eye, it's the brain and the eye together. So it's nothing you could fix with like LASIK or something or glasses. He's got some profound issue.
Or like implants or anything.
No, not yet. So watching him struggle and go through stuff, like I was never a jock ever. I was never good at sports. But my kid was the opposite of me. He was like, he wanted to be into sports. So I was like, but he's visually impaired. So he's like, I want to be in football. I want to be in baseball. And we were like, hey man, whatever you want to do, we'll support you. So he would be, he wanted a basketball one day when he was 6. And I'm like, okay. And he had a hard time at it. And I said, listen, everything you do in life, you got to just keep doing it till you do it. You can't like let anybody tell you who you are. you just got to do shit. But then I'm like telling him this advice. And then I'm like, oh, shit. Well, what am I giving him this advice for? I got to do the same thing. So when he graduated from high school, I said, I'm going to go back to school. And I did. And I got my degrees. I did well. I was on the honors list. But I just had to try. And I worked my ass off. And I looked at it as I'm going into this knowing I have a deficit.
And
so I'm just going to like
figure out how to work through that.
Yeah. So I got tutors. I got people to help me. And I just kept telling myself, it's okay. If you fail this class, you'll take it again. You'll just keep doing it. You know.
Bravo, Dean.
Thank you.
Good for you, man. That's awesome. That's more people should have the fucking bravery to just like full on do it. Just do it. Fuck it.
Well, I talk to people though that have learning disabilities and they're like, I can't do this. I have a learning disability. And I'm like, I have a learning disability. And they're like, what? You do? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm a librarian. So you could do this. And they're like, oh, okay. And they're like, it's like they have permission to do it now because somebody said, I have the same issue as you, but you could do this. All and right. It's kind of, I think, freeing for them, you know?
Lead by example, sir. Lead by example. You can't tell people what to do, but they can see you do it and be inspired by it.
Yeah, I think we all have to do that. You know, we all have to give ourselves permission to like do it and fail and do it again, you know?
Yeah, you fall down, you get back up and you just keep going no matter what your lot in life is. That's the mantra to live by. If you can go home and pat yourself on the back that you did the best you could do that day, then that's all you can do and try again tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, especially if you have kids, because like, you know, we got to set the example for our kids, you know, and we can't tell the kids to do better than us. We got to do better ourselves. So, you know, we got to just keep trying.
Truth from Dean Jones, everyone. So how'd the basketball turn out? Did he?
You know, he ended up being really good at basketball. And it's funny because he didn't make it on the basketball team. I remember when he was in his freshman year, he wanted to be on the basketball team. And I'm like, hey, go for it. If you don't make it, you don't make it. You know, not everybody makes basketball, but you got to at least try. He did. He did really well, even though he's got visual impairment. And he's learned to do echolocation and listen.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Yeah, he compensates. And he can shoot a basket every time. And he didn't make it on the team. And he gave me a call at work. I was at work. You know, I was a single parent. And he didn't, you know, have a mom or anything. So for reasons I won't go into, but
no need.
But I was raising him myself in his high school years. And that's when I got custody. And he called me. I was always at work all the time. I was working 7 days a week most of the time. And he's like, I didn't make the team. I said, listen, don't let this get you down. I said, what else do you want to do? And he goes, what do you mean? I said, is there any other sport you want to do? And he's like, well, I could do wrestling. I said, try out for wrestling. I said, when is the tryouts? He goes, tonight. I said, go for it. I'll pay for it. I'll do whatever needs to be done. And he tried out for wrestling. He got on the team. He ended up making varsity, getting awards. He got a Lemons jacket. He got the whole nine yards, man.
Good for him. Yeah. Wrestling seems like the right sport. Yeah. For
wrestling was great. It was, you know, what's crazy is it was a co-ed team. They had more girls than boys.
What?
Those girls were terrifying. Vicious, terrifying. Never like they were like, I've never seen anything so scary. They would go in, it's like Tasmanian devils, man. And they had to like sometimes wrestle against the boys, and the boys would be like, mommy, you know,
the girl hurt me, she dislocated my shoulder.
That happened once, literally. That happened once.
Hey, boys, don't mess with the ladies, man. They
no,
they seem demure, it's all a facade.
And they'd have the award ceremonies, and these girls would be the rowdy ones. The boys would be sitting there all prim and proper, and the girls would be like, yeah, whoop, 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 you know?
yep. I worked in a bar that I worked at, it was just, the guys are usually way chiller, and the girls come in their groups, and they're just hooting and hollering. There's a mom's weekend in Athens, Ohio, where I went to college at OU. And that weekend was literally the loudest weekend of the year. Like, you guys have that? You have like parents' weekend, mom's weekend, mm-hmm. Right? When the moms show up, oh boy, Oh boy, the whole town is just like a roar of cackle. It's like,
wah! Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh man.
They're gonna tear it up. Check the insurance, make sure everything's covered. Mom's here.
You know, a funny story about Mom's weekend is also that across the board condom sales go up during the weekend and just Mom's. Again, that's an yeah. Someone did a story in the like Athens paper about it one year.
Oh my God. That is not surprising, but that's awesome. You go, women. Uh-huh. You go,
power,
moms.
Power to moms. Mom power.
Well, my wife, you know, I married my wife I met her in library school, and I didn't like, I thought she's too, she's out of my league. There's no way I'm going to date this woman. So we talked about writing, and I was working on writing conferences. And I just wanted to talk about that because she said she was a writer. There's no way I'm thinking we're going to, you know, date or anything. I was just like, you know, hey, just going to be nice. And we ended up dating after that. She was going through divorce, and I had, you know, we both talked about parent custody and stuff like that. And we ended up getting together and getting married, but she had 5 kids and I had the 1. And so I supersized my family, and she is so tough. She gets so much done. She's amazing. She's a workhorse. She just like works all week, takes care of these 5 kids, gets them on track. She works for NASA, does her job, which is important. She's just incredible.
Beast of a woman. Congratulations, yeah, sir.
She's great.
You're a lucky man.
I tell myself that every day. And if I don't remember, she reminds me.
Touche. I actually just off sidehand said the other day, because we're getting ready to go to Texas for season 3, and I was like, and we're taking the dogs with us, and I was like, actually, Jordan might have the heart, because she's usually not on set that much, right? So she doesn't have to be. So she's watching the dogs, but she's gonna have to get pulled back in for scenes over and over again to go check on the dog, go charge the car, come back, just like all this stuff. And I was like, actually, she's has the hardest job because she's just all over the place. So she never gets a chance to focus on what one thing that she's doing. And somebody next to me was like, well, it's fine. She's a woman.
Yeah.
They're better than you. They can do more than you.
Yep.
That's what they do. But, you know,
they are the evolved species.
They are. We are.
Now, what part of Texas are you going through? Because Texas, I've been to Texas. I lived there for a couple of years. Some of the greatest bars and restaurants I've been to in the United States have been in Texas.
We are going to Austin, well, around Austin area, around Dallas area, and to Bryan, Texas.
Nice. My family is largely from the Austin area. They're at a town called Burnett, which nobody, even in Austin, knows where it is. But Austin's great, and then Dallas is freaking huge. If you've not been there before, the freeway is a little daunting. But it's a great city.
Yeah, I love freeways. They're my favorite. Turnpikes, they're great. I wish I could stay on them forever.
Dallas Freeway was designed by Dr. Seuss and Salvador Dali. It's very creepy and weird. It's very high. I warn you now, take some Dramamine before you go on it, because it's like being on a flight.
Oh, good. Okay, we're driving a Tesla all the way to Dallas, a low-range Tesla, all the way from Savannah to Texas. So it's going to take us 22 hours. I'm going to blog the whole thing.
Nice. Looking forward to that. That'll be interesting.
It's going to be. Yeah. But it should be all right, because the Tesla literally plans all the spots, right? And we have the low range too, so it's even more dramatic.
You know what's weird about Texas is that you could get really good food in gas stations.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of gas station food stories. Do you happen to know of a chef-owned and worked-at restaurant in Austin or in Burnett?
No, but I could find out and send you the information. I could see what I know some people there. I could find out.
All right. Well, I potentially have one spot left that I keep rearranging, that if I get one, I will go there. And if I don't, whatever, it's fine. So if you think of anything, hit me up.
Yeah, I have some contacts there. I'll reach out.
As long as they work there, they own the place, and then they don't have like 5 restaurants. Preferably just one restaurant. Just one. A lot of Dallas. Dallas is hard to find, you know, these little like restaurant owners, because all the like really kind of, because I try to like, go for like casual fine dining, right? Like somewhere in between, because those are usually the restaurants that open at 5 o'clock at night. They're usually closed on like a Monday or Tuesday, right? They're, you know, they're local favorites. In Dallas, they're all just like, oh, well, this chef started this, but then he opened this one, and then he also has this, this, and this. And like, every single place is like, oh, this is cool. This guy's, oh, and he also has two other restaurants. Damn it.
Yeah, that sounds like, that sounds like Dallas. Yeah, yeah,
Dallas is a bitch, man. Hunting.
It's like a weird area because it's very odd there, because there's a lot packed into the downtown Dallas area. And there's so much there, like there's so many restaurants crowded next to each other. It's a lot of food there though, but there's a lot of stuff off the beaten path too. I know when I was there in the 80s, there was an area called Deep Ellum, which had a lot of like warehouses that had like bars in them and stuff.
Oh, they're probably all breweries now. You could listen to alternate
bands there. Yeah, probably. Yeah, you're probably right. I think that's the case actually, yeah.
Breweries.
There's a lot of pubs there.
Breweries and more breweries.
Yeah, we used to go to a pub in Fort Worth called the Pig and the Whistle that had like literally every beer in the world was there. And you could like try if you were there long enough to like work your way through all the beers in the world, and you got like a t-shirt at the end of it or something.
I drank every beer at the Pig and Whistle, and all I got was this damn t-shirt.
Yeah. I think that was probably what it said.
Touche. So since you started the getting more into the food thing, you've been cooking more at home, or do you cook at home? Or
yeah, in fact, I've been really doing the whole challenge with sourdough bread and making bread, and I've been really getting serious about bread and like doing pizza every week for the kids. I've been getting like, you know, the baking stone, the peel, having the starters, getting different types of flours. And I've been talking to authors that have been talking about different types of flours, and they've been getting me interested in trying things like spelt, buckwheat, kamut, and different types of flours, and seeing how they work. And the kids are pretty good about it. They'll eat a lot of the stuff I make. So they like bread a lot. So, and I'm teaching my stepdaughter, Cassidy, how to do making baguettes, because she likes French bread a lot. So she's making baguettes and stuff. And
nice.
I was talking to Dory Greenspan lately, and we were talking about it. And she's saying, well, are you afraid of anything? And I was saying, I was afraid of making croissants. And she's like, well, just do it. At worst, she goes, a bad croissant is still pretty good. And I'm like, that's a really good point.
Yeah. It's like pizza. Even when it's bad, it's good. Which my mother always said was like, pizza's like sex. Even when it's bad, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, I fuck up pizza sometimes at home, and like the kids still eat it. They don't care. They don't even know. So they're like, okay, whatever.
Right.
But yeah, it's never that bad. Even if it's like kind of a flat crust, you're like, but it's still, you know, got cheese on it. So that's a win.
Right. And you made your own dough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
are your breads healthier? Do you find that have you worked your way into like healthier breads as you've gone along?
Yeah. Cause I try and do like, even if it's like a white loaf, I try and sneak some like, some different types of flours in there to kind of like make it a little bit more healthier. And I think the probiotics of like the starter kind of make it digests the flour, so it makes it a little bit healthier. Mm-hmm. So I think that's like a win there. And I feel like the kids are getting something a little bit better than just eating like Wonder Bread or something like that.
Right. Like even at the store, I feel like it's hard to find what is actually good for you bread. You like, from what I understand, and let me know if you've heard any of this, seeded bread is the only actually truly nutritious bread. Like, you know what I mean? So the grain is actually slightly seeded first. So it actually pops out of its shell before it actually goes into the process of becoming bread. You heard of this?
That sounds right. Yeah. I like to put seeds in bread if I can. I always like to try and put nuts in them too, if I can too. But I love seeds and bread.
No, like the the grain itself is germinated slightly.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, before be processed into flour or.
Yeah, I've been trying some different grains here, and trying some like heritage grains and stuff, and like trying different flours that have maybe higher nutritional content. So I've been trying to put like some like what they call like kamut or spelt or buckwheat, and I find it raises the nutritional profile a little bit. But when I do the autolyze thing where I'll have the flour and water and maybe a little bit of salt or some starter in there overnight, that kind of does a thing where it pre-digests it. I think it makes it a little bit more healthy. It breaks down the protein so it's like more nutritious.
Right. And it's not just the bleached white flour bread. I'm super interested in the bread. I want to be able to make bread. What are some things that you just fucked up and you're like, that just don't do that, make sure you do this, things that you've come along?
Well, bread, I think the one thing you got to do with bread is, just like we said before, you got to give yourself permission to fail, because sourdough is a bitch. It really is. Like, there's times when I just wanted to say, fuck this, and throw it out. I have to be careful about language on this program.
No, we're explicit.
Okay, good. Yeah, there's times when I'm like about ready to throw this shit out the window and say, fuck this. Because you'll spend a lot of work on it sometimes. Yeah, well, you know, you'll work on it for like 2 days. And then, or even worse, like you work in the starter for like a week and then it like turns nasty. And you're like, what the fuck, sourdough?
Have you gotten it right? Is it still a little iffy sometimes? Or
it took me a year.
A year.
I hate when people like, oh yeah, I just started sourdough last week and I'm mastering it. I'm like, screw you. Cause like, it took me a year of like hard work to like get to where I was somewhat competent. Cause like, you got to get the bread to where it like rises to a certain way. So it doesn't, what happens is if you're not really good at it and your technique's not good, it just turns into like this pancake loaf where the bread is kind of flat, and it's not flat like focaccia, but it's like not high and like risen like you want. It doesn't have all the bubbles.
Right.
And that's just awful, because like, it feels like you spend a lot of time, and then like sometimes the kids are like, oh, didn't turn out so great. And you're like,
good job, dad. Yeah. Mess like up that. The sourdough again. He's never getting this shit right.
Yeah. And it's like, and my wife's even like, you know, we spend a lot of money on all this flour and stuff. It's kind of like costly for us to do this. And I'm like, I'll get it right.
And eventually you did.
Yeah, but it took me an embarrassingly long time.
It doesn't matter how you got there. It's the fact that you got there. And now you can make delicious sour bread and everyone can go to hell.
Yeah, exactly. I like that. I should have that on a plaque somewhere so I can remember that. Because when you fail, it's just like, when the bread's bad, it's like, it's really bad.
But just like life, when anything starts to get hard, just remember, you can make sourdough bread.
Yeah, that's right.
Fucking A, man.
I like that. Yeah, I've been trying different types of breads and I'm trying to branch out. I'm going to actually do croissants this weekend. I'm making some other things too. I always do, my household's big on Halloween and we always set up altars for our dead relatives and do food for them. Like my stepfather always put out a beer for him and a pack of Camels for him. And some chicken and dumplings is what he likes. And my grandfather, I put Coors out for him. He's good. My friend Jim, who died, who I love dearly and miss him, we put out a margarita for him. And we put little altars for all these people. And I have all this Halloween themed stuff. We put out food. We put out like chili. We do pumpkin carving. Relatives come over and we play spooky music and watch horror films, old like cheesy Halloween horror films and stuff, and just have a great time on Halloween.
Man, I really love that. I want to start doing that. Like, we don't get trick or treaters, right? In my neighborhood, they all go to the super rich neighborhood. Nobody hangs out in the neighborhood. But that would be really cool. Just setting out there. I never thought to do that. Just, you know, in memory of, you know, maybe they'll come visit. And since they don't get trick or treaters, maybe I can get some ghosts.
Yeah, there you go. They'll visit.
Right?
Like, hey, man, I'm
totally
digging
that.
I make bread of the dead,
idea.
Which is a pan de muerte, which is the Mexican bread. It's a sweet bread with a little bit of orange and anise in it. It's got eggs in it and butter. Make that for the kids. They like that.
Oh, cool. That really is. Are you dressing up this year? What are you dressing up as?
Yeah, I'm always dressed up. I'm going to do kind of a Victorian vampire. My friend got me some contact lenses. My friend has all this like Halloween stuff and like costumes and stuff, and he had extra. So he gave me some contact lenses that are white. I'm going to wear those and some fangs. We're going to do like different lighting and stuff in there. And if anybody comes, we're going to scare the crap out of them.
Hell yeah. You are totally into Halloween.
Oh yeah, my son's gonna be Michael Myers. He's a big guy. He's bigger than me, so he looks scary when he wears the blue jumpsuit and the mask. He's terrifying.
And there's a whole new movie out. Like, that has to be exciting for him.
Oh yeah, I'm a big horror fan, so I love all these films when they come out. Can't wait for all the new stuff.
Do you watch how it was making the movie? Oh man, what is the name of that show on Netflix? Movies That We Love, or
it, yes, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I love all those. Yeah, they talked about Halloween, and yeah, I follow all that stuff. I love those films. I'm a big film buff, so I love horror films, but good horror films, good older ones. But I love the cheesy 70s horror films.
I just watched
the really bad ones.
Yeah, I just watched. I watched American Horror Story, like the first season, and I liked it. And the second season was like, eh. And then I just didn't watch it. And then the campsite one came out, and I was like, okay, maybe I'll try that, because that looks, you know, cheesy and fun. And who didn't like, you know, Friday the 13th, or not Friday the 13th, but you know, Jason and all that. And so we watched it, and I was like, ah, that was actually okay. It was pretty good. They took it up a notch. It was, you know.
Yeah, it's hit or miss. I find American Horror Story is hit or miss. It's one of those things. I like it. I think it's good. I watched it up through Roanoke, and then I was like, I don't know. I can't keep up with this. But I find that they're going back to good stuff, like you said. Although the one with the camp one was kind of hard for me, because I was young during that time period, and it's like cringy, because it's like I see all the tropes from the 80s, and it's like, ah, no, no, the clothing, the hair, oh my God.
Oh, it's all making a comeback. Oh, yeah. Though the leg warmers have yet to come back.
Oh,
still,
yeah, no. Nobody wants that.
Also, perms have yet to make a return. I don't know that they will.
It all comes back eventually, though. Yeah, right.
The high-rise jean came back, the bell-bottom. We're working our way through the 60s, the 70s. I think high-rise jeans were the 70s, so we're working our way through that. And what were women's jeans like in the 80s? Oh, puffy with elastic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, Bugle Boys.
Oh, yeah. It seemed like we had so many different micro-fashion time periods during the 80s, though. I know I went from high school to being punk, like, right really quickly. I was in England during like the mid 80s, and I just like really embraced the punk thing and got to go to a lot of clubs in London, and like being there was so fun, and getting to like be into that whole fashion thing was amazing. I got to see so many great bands back then, but oh, you know, man. Cool. It's a different world now.
What were you doing in England?
I was in the Air Force there. I asked for Japan or Philippines or Korea, and like the military, they sent me to England.
Cool though. Like, hey, if you're actually going to be sent somewhere, that's probably not
I was awful. I was the worst soldier I think they ever had. I just fucked up all the time and couldn't pay attention to directions. I just was like Gomer Pyle, but like I just fucked up everything. I think what they let me get out a little early too. They're like, you not really cut out for the military. You need to kind of go, man.
Like, you know what? You don't even have to finish out this tour, honestly. Like, you can, you want to go home? You can.
That's exactly pretty much how it went.
Beetle Bailey.
Yep, that was me. I really sucked at it, but it was fine. I did my time.
Nice. I don't think anybody probably knows who Beetle Bailey even is anymore. Is he still in the papers?
I think so. Is he? Mort Walker. He does Beetle Bailey. He did Beetle Bailey and the Viking one, Haggard the Horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I love the comics back in the day. Back when we all still got the paper, if that still exists.
Man, I was, as soon as my grandpa's paper came, like, I was first to it and just like, find the middle. There's the comics. Take out the comics. Go to the bathroom.
I got the paper. I got the paper last Sunday.
Pretend like I was an adult reading on on the toilet.
That's awesome.
Right, though?
I miss the comics.
With my hot chocolate.
People knock. You're like, I'm in here.
Occupied. Thank you.
As you're turning
you snap your newspaper back. I'm like, yeah. All right. What is Garfield doing?
What's up with Ziggy today?
Or that annoying lady who could never get a date right. Like, what was up with her?
Oh, Kathy.
Kathy.
Yeah, that was pretty. Kathy was always like as completely depressing at all times. And you're like, I thought comics were supposed to be upbeat and like humorous. And this is just like angsty and sad.
It's Kathy.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Good times, man. Thank you for taking me back, man. Way back. Now I want to go get a newspaper and see if there's still comics in it. Sunday was the colored comics. They were in color.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I missed that. I worked for a newspaper for a while and got to work in the newspaper industry for 6 years, which I didn't mean to do. I only spent to work for 2 months, ended up staying there for 6 years, but that is a tough business. You're always doing everything in advance for the future. So you never know what day it is because like you're always talking about months from now or weeks from now and stuff like that.
I want to make a show that's basically like Beyond the Check, but it's called Dining with the Dead, where we go and find restaurants and have the chef cook up an offering that would have been potentially something that would have been the last thing that the ghost would have eaten, right? Right, so I'd cook with the chef and then my buddy's the ghost hunter and he'd be out doing the ghost hunting and whatever. And then we'd sit down at a table wherever the haunting occurs and still hunt the ghost and offer up the meal and whatever. And if we don't see anything, the steak was still delicious.
No, I like that. What would be your last meal if you had to have a last meal?
Oh boy. What would be my last meal? I don't know. I like a lot of things. Maybe General Tso's chicken.
Yeah, no, that's good. I like that.
Right? Like, I really like General Tso's. I don't want it to be pizza because I've already eaten enough of it throughout my life, you know, and probably enough General Tso's, but still.
I always think that I think about that a lot. And I always think if I had to have like an offering for me, just some like warm, fresh tortillas, some like beans, and, you know, some like chilies and stuff, that would be it for me. That's all I would need. Maybe a nice couple of good beers, you know. Yeah. That's good.
Very beachy of you.
Yeah, I like that. Just that's all I need. I'm good. I'd be good.
All right. That's a solid, well-rounded meal. Hell yeah. Awesome, dude.
Although we're lucky, though, in the Bay Area here, we have so much good food. And God, I'm surrounded where I'm at right now just by millions of great restaurants. The Bay Area is just Oakland. I'm near Oakland. Oakland is just chock full of everything. Every nationality, type of food around the world. You can get it here.
You make it down to Fisherman's Wharf for a chowder and a bread bowl. Awesome.
You know, I worked for 15 years across from there. And I ate there a lot. And that was hard to work there because like all the tourists. And I was in a university across the street. Mm-hmm. Shitty place for a university. Who thought of putting a university across from Pier 39B is beyond me. But like we were there for a long time. I like this location better, but like I missed the wharf. Chinatown is so fucking fun. If you've ever been to, Chinatown,
I actually have been in San Francisco Chinatown, and they were mean to me.
Oh no! Where did you go?
Not all of them, but I don't know. I think we just wanted to have an appetizer, right? And so we were just like we stopped by a couple restaurants just to look at the menu, and they're like, "Come in! Oh, you want to eat? Yeah, come on!" And we're just like, "Well, we're just kind of browsing," and they're like, "Oh, okay, never mind," and just like. Off to the next, right? Okay, well.
That sounds right, actually, yeah.
So we'd wander off till somebody was actually very friendly and was like, oh, yes, we'll let you look for a second and not get mad at you when you don't immediately come through the door.
No, yeah. There are places, though, that are, like, notoriously rude that I think almost, like, do it as, like, a kind of trademark. So there is, like, I miss it, though. Like, I love walking through Chinatown at like 7 o'clock in the morning. I miss that so much. And the food there and the bars, there's some great old, there's a couple bars there that you feel like you're in an old movie. Like you expect me to come in like with a white suit and a Panama hat and like try and sell you some like artifact or something. You just like feel like that's going to happen. And North Beach.
There's a monkey behind the bar for some reason.
Yeah. Like you would be okay. That makes sense. That tracks, you know. But like North Beach too, like you just feel like you're gonna walk into like maybe somebody who's from like Goodfellas or something, you know, and it's just crazy there. It's San Francisco's it's a weird, bizarre, crazy city.
Yeah, it's
hard to get around.
A lot of hills,
public transit.
The skateboarders are insane.
Yep.
I don't know how they don't die more often. They are crazy.
Yeah.
Those hills are very talented.
We got our skateboarders in San Francisco are amazing and they're fearless.
Yeah.
And crazy.
Yeah. Those hills are not, those are steep hills. If you've never been to San Francisco, it's not just like hills. They're like downward ramps, right? Like, you know, when you try to stop a truck on those ramps in the mountains, they're that steep, if not steeper.
No, I love the city. I miss being there daily, but I don't. Because, like, you know, it's also a kind of aggro place to be. People are, like, horrible there, too. But, like, there's good and bad. But, like, I miss it. I miss the there was a bar called the Pied Piper. It's in the business district. And it looks like something that Don Draper would get a drink in. And they got a Maxfield Parrish painting behind the bar. And it's like all wood paneling. And they have the best martinis. I miss their martinis so much. Such a good place.
Oh, you can always go visit.
I'll go back.
You'll go back.
But yeah, it's getting across the bay. It's like, I don't know. It's a slog.
It's a slog. As we get older, we just don't want to go that far. Hey, yeah, maybe one day you can just have a martini drone to you from there.
That's probably possible. I didn't think of that. I could probably have Uber Eats deliver the martini for me.
The future's coming, people. Or it's That's already right. here. I don't know. All right. We've covered a lot of ground today, sir. We should do this again sometime. Yeah.
I would love to. I'd be down to talk to you anytime.
Awesome.
If you come to the Bay Area, please look me up. I would love to have some drinks with you, some food. It'd be great. Yeah.
My wife's never been to California. I have to come sometime.
The Mexican food is amazing here. Everything's great here. Brown Sugar Kitchen in Oakland is just tremendous. If you ever get to come here, some of the best food you've ever had in your life.
Well, I'll be calling you to find restaurants when I do get there.
So. Oh yeah, and I could introduce you to some of the big food writers here. You'd have a great time.
Oh, all right, booking the flight. We're on our way.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Awesome, sir. Well, you want to give some shout outs for yourself there, real quick?
Yeah, please listen to my podcast, The Well Seasoned Librarian. I have some great guests coming up. We've just talked to people. I've talked to some guests that I still can't believe I talked to. Dory Greenspan, Rose Levy Barenbaum, who did the Cake Bible. I mean, some great authors, and I've been really blessed. And next week, I'm going to be talking to some great writers, too. Just please check out the podcast. I run twice a week, and I'm looking for new people all the time. And I can't wait to have Rayshawn Parker on my podcast.
Yeah, we'll be hanging out soon.
Yep.
Awesome. Have you ever heard of Lynn Bowman?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you should hit her up sometime. Has she been, okay. She been on your podcast?
No, but I will be contacting them soon.
Brownies for Breakfast. The diabetics, for a cookbook for diabetics and those who love them. Super.
That sounds right up my alley.
Yeah, super healthy. Super. Like, she may have pumpkin. Pumpkin's a big deal in her world. She's like 75 years old and she looks like she's 60. She's fantastic.
I love pumpkin. That works out for me. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Well, good talking to you.
Awesome, Dean. Everybody, Dean Jones, fantastic guy. Thanks for hanging out.
And, thank you, and happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. That's why the dogs were howling earlier, people.
The werewolves howling.
Werewolves. Awesome. Definitely go listen to Dean's podcast, The Well-Seasoned Librarian. He's a wealth of knowledge. And if you haven't, go watch my TV show and follow me on wherever you want. Just Google Rayshawn Parker. Yeah, it's that easy. Rayshawn. Awesome. Dean, cheers, brother.
Great show. Thank you. I love the show, too. It's really good.
Oh, thank you, man.
I've been watching it on YouTube.
Or Tubi?
Yep.
Tubi. Tubi TV. It's free TV. I'll take that dollar anytime, Fox.
I look forward to seeing you with your own Netflix show one of these days.
Fingers crossed. We're working on it.
It's going to happen. I believe it.
All right, Dean. Awesome. Tell the family I said what's up. And
I will.
Tell that son if I'm getting another hip replacement coming up, but maybe if we're down there, I'll let him dunk on me.
Okay. Well, yeah, he's a massage therapist now.
Oh yeah.
He does physical therapy.
So oh well, cool. I'll be doing my own physical therapy in January.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
Thank you, sir. Have a wonderful day. And
you too.
Keep reading.
Oh yeah.
Cheers.